There was a producer working there called Tom Mack. Tom Mack was a real jazz fan, and he was hemmed in by working at that label because he was doing all this stuff that was not his musical love at all, and, you know, as much, but it was a job. He says, I have to warn you, there's not going to be much promotion or anything. There's no budget for it. You're not really in the roster here of a dot artist. You're just, we're going to make it, it'll come out, but there's not going to be a push behind it, and so on. Well, I said, gee, if you let me do what I want to do, you know, if you let me record the songs I want and or whatever, I mean, we'll do it the best way we can. So who should we get? Piano player. Okay, Earl Hines. Well, he says, let's get Benny Carter, because Benny Carter's also, he plays all this great reed music, but he never, people don't hear him enough as a trumpet player, and he really plays good trumpet. So let's get him to play trumpet. And let's get Hines to not play Dixieland, let's play, he play, Hines plays when he out of the band context. Well, it went on like that. We got Leroy Vinegar on bass, and we got Shelly Mann on drums. You know, and those are people who are known more for mainstream modern jazz, I guess, at that time. Or,
yeah, they were hot names.
Hot names, but people that I had run into and worked with in some circumstances. So we put it all together. We had precisely 4 hours, you know, to do it in.
Yes, I fell for you jiving, then I took you in. Now all you got to offer me's a silly grin. Why don't you do right like some other men do? Ooh, get out of here and get me some money too. Well, you're sitting down wondering what it's all about. If you ain't got the money, they're gonna put you out. Why don't you do right?
I don't know what happened to me. I was like so busy coming up to the thing. I'd been traveling. If you can imagine the life of a person with 3 children and an active traveling singing career. And I used to even make my own clothes because we were always broke. I liked what I could make better than what I could buy. And, you know, there was just no time for planning or thinking about things and all that. And I came home off the road. The session was supposed to be whatever, and I had no time to think about it. I didn't have time to even work out a list of tunes. I get to the studio late because various complications back home. Hines and Benny Carter, of course, take charge of the date, and both of them are leaders, and so they knew exactly how to pull it together and make something happen. And there were no charts, no rehearsal, no forethought, picking, just randomly picking tunes out of my book that I hadn't done that I would like to do. That's how the record came together. Given such a tenuous start, you know, there are some things on here I really like a lot.
You picked a ballad.
Yeah, because nobody ever hears me sing ballads and nobody thinks of me as a ballad singer, you know, but I love singing certain ballads, not every one.
Now, this one you picked is Porgy, but not I Loves You, Porgy.
No, this is it's not the well-known Gershwin I Love You, Porgy. This is Porgy, well, where I got it, I forget.
Great, let's listen.
Ain't no man in Charleston who's a stranger to Big Crown's Bess. Catfish Row is close tied to the side of this old blue dress. But there is one they call Porgy. Seems like that man understood. Got his trust in me, Lord. So I just gotta stick for good. I got a man now, I've got Porgy. I understand now, I've got Porgy. I'm through with byways, 'cause his way is my way forevermore. Lord, Lord, when I feel His arms all about me, knowing He can't go on without me, I want to beg for a chance just to camp by His door. Say He's not much for folks to look and see, lazy and no account as He can be. But He's got a good kind of love for me. Changing my style and my way of living, glad I stopped taking and started giving. I've got a man, I've got Porgy now. I've got a man now, I've got Porgy. I understand now, I've got Porgy. I've got a man, I've got Porgy now.
By 1961, Barbara Dane had opened her own establishment, a nightclub in San Francisco she called Sugar Hill, Home of the Blues. Again, she sang what she liked, brought in terrific guest musicians like Jimmy Rushing, Mose Allison, Mama Yancey, Tampa Red, Lonnie Johnson, Big Mama Thornton, and T-Bone Walker. At Sugar Hill, she was accompanied primarily by her two stalwart comrades, bassist Wellman Bro and the multiply talented Kenny Good News Whitson, who played both piano and trumpet, often simultaneously. Both are heard on her 1961 album, I'm On My Way.
Now look here, Daddy, I want to tell you, please get out of my sight. I'm playing quits now, right from this very night. Oh, you had your day. Don't stand around and frown. You've been a good old wagon, honey, but you done broke down. You better go to the blacksmith shop, get yourself overhauled, because there's not a thing about you to make a good woman want to bow. Now nobody wants a baby when a real man can be found. You've been a good old wagon, honey, but you done broke down. Sport yourself, someday you'll have to pay. Yes,
you know, when you were in your prime, you like to run around. You've been a good old wag, Daddy, but you done broke down. Now there's no need to cry, oh, and make a big show. My new man taught me more about love than you will ever know. I'm gonna stay home and watch the late show. I gotta run downtown. I got a brand new daddy. Honey, it broke down. Yeah, brand new daddy.
You're hearing Barbara Dane, A Life in Song, a jazz rhythm pioneering woman of jazz profile. I'm Dave Radlauer. Thanks for joining me. By the way, you can find more about Barbara Dane and her music on the web at barbaradane.net. That's www.barbaradane.net. Or you can feel free to contact me for information, answers to any of your jazz questions, or program playlists at www.jazzhot.bigstep.com. This is Dave Radlauer having a conversation with Barbara Dane. It's great to have you here, Barbara.
Yeah, nice to be able to just go tracking through memory lane here with you.
Well, what's interesting about your career, as I said before, is you've rejected some of the boundaries and the labels in music, and this has allowed you to actually sort of have parallel careers in music.
I
wanted to move back to some of the other material that was recorded early on, which is of a more oral tradition nature.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to tell us about the Chambers Brothers, how that
came
about?
Well, yeah, since I made a whole album with them, might as well talk about it. I sang a great deal at a place called the Ash Grove in Los Angeles throughout the years of, 58, 59, 60, and on down. As long as the place existed, I was such a fixture there. Some people thought I owned it, but I didn't. It was a man named Ed Pearl who created this wonderful place. He always brought together various musical elements of folk and oral traditions and didn't shy away from mixing what seemed strange bookings or odd combinations. He really created an opportunity for people to explore each other's music by being on the same bill together. Now, I loved singing there because Ed really understood what I was about as a performer. I could do any kind of format there. And I guess the majority of things, gigs were probably done by myself with a guitar, but I would always call in different musicians. And after I found Kenny Whitson, I'd use that as the basis of bringing in different jazz musicians from the area to play this or that horn. And I think it was around a holiday or something, he booked in a gospel singing group of young men from Watts, had come from Mississippi. All of the terrible, terrible conditions that black people in Mississippi were enduring back in those days that they grew up in the 20s, 30s, early 40s. So they were wonderful at harmonizing because they had always done that as children, and after working on the rows in the field, they'd sit down and harmonize until the time to go the other direction or whatever. One of the things is that I'd love to have them come and harmonize with me because I was doing more and more of the gospel and spiritual-based songs of the Mississippi otherwise the Southern Freedom Movement that was building all through the 60s. So I would sing the songs and invite them as guests, or sometimes they were hired, or we'd be on the bill or with something. So we got to know each other that way, and they really did a great job of it. And I always wanted to record us together because I thought it was an important statement to record this black group with me, you know, because there weren't very many at all anywhere, any black and white mixed musical ensembles. And in fact, sometime around there when I made the Capitol recordings, they mentioned, the producer mentioned the idea of having Jimmy Witherspoon and me do a duo, and the company rejected it because it would have involved having a black man and a white woman on a cover.
Yeah, I think people forget, you know, this is 30, 40 years after the civil rights movement made its biggest gains, and people forget just how bad things were. And so you're telling me that at that time there was concern that you couldn't record with Jimmy Witherspoon because, oh my God, we're going to have a white woman with a black man on the cover of an album.
That's right. Yeah, so then we're going to go for that. The only thing I could think of to do was try and arrange it with Mo Ash at Folkways was willing to put the record out. He had no qualms about, you know, he was proud to try to put something out with this mixture going that the commercial companies wouldn't do. But how do we get everybody in the studio? How do we get the Chambers Brothers to the East Coast now? Because I've already made a trip to the West Coast to record them, and that didn't pan out. So I called Pete Seeger, who was had a lot to do with the Newport Folk Festival at the time, and I said, you know, there's this wonderful group called the Chambers Brothers, and you think you could put in a word and get them onto the folk festival? Well, because I had already been sort of banned from the folk festival, which is a whole nother story, but so anyway, Pete said, well, that's wonderful, it sounds like just what we need. So he got them onto the Newport Festival, and then I went up on my own, and but anyhow, that got him to New York. So they get to New York to on their way to Newport, and at that point they're getting already rushed by various people who they've now developed into what later became the famous Chambers Brothers rock area of music type of band with The Time Has Come Today and all this stuff. So they've become that on stage, but nobody knows it yet, and some producer sees them and they're giving them the big rush. And so now they're in New York and they don't have time for this project now either. So I have to run and basically say, I said, listen, you guys, if you don't do this, the studio's already booked, it's all, everything's all set. I got you here. You're going to Newport because I got you on there. We're going to make this thing. And they said, well, all right, on the way to the airport. So they literally came to the studio on the way to the airport, and we made the thing in 4 hours. And
What did that album, what was the title that album came out of?
Barbara Dane and the Chambers Brothers.
And I think you selected We'll Never Turn Back.
Yes, yes. And the song, of course, is very, very important for the civil rights movement.
This is Dave Radlauer with my very special guest, Barbara Dane, who for about 40 years now has been following her own eclectic muse and singing in any style she feels like, and also a significant social activist on the side that I think many of the jazz folks aren't quite aware of.
Just a little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine with every day.
This record, On My Way, where was that recorded? In Southern California?
On My Way was recorded in the Capitol Studios.
In Southern California.
In the Round Tower on Vine Street, yes.
That's an odd building.
Yeah, it is.
They had some pretty good studios in there.
And it was an odd situation for me to be in, too. I don't know if you've ever happened to run across... Leonard Feather wrote a column about me signing with Capitol and what strange bedfellows this was going to make, because they were so straight-laced and commercial and everything, you know. The only reason that I did, at the time that I signed with them, I was also being heavily courted by Atlantic, and Atlantic would have, in hindsight, would have been a far better label for me over a lifetime, you know, been very sympathetic and supportive. But actually, I lived up two blocks from the Vine Street studio, up on a hill next to the Hollywood Bowl there, and I thought, well, this is, I'm already away from my children and everything too much, and this will be handier. I got dropped by Capitol because of the kids. Right after I made the album, they sent me on a national promo tour, which went very well. Anyway, I had taken my kids, a couple of my kids, with me on this trip because it was Easter vacation for them, and I did it at my expense and kept them out of the way of everything. It didn't intrude, but still, the message gets back to the label that you're not out there just being, you know, 100,000% Ms. Capital and, you know, ready to knock your grandmother over to get to the microphone.
Oh, well, I gave me the gift of love. Peace came from above, and I told me to watch and pray.
Unfortunately, we live in a country where the music is part of what's called show business, and that means you have to be in there playing a game and getting position for this and that, and you have to, you know. And I was really very rebellious about all that, I must say, and part of it is because I felt, and I think it was accurate, that the business had a very low estimation of women in general. And I didn't feel like I wanted to be anybody's little toy girl or anybody's, this whole thing about can't you wear a little bit lower cut dress, girly, and oh, how come you want to wear, I purposely wore my hair straight and sort of jaggedy and not very, I didn't go in for the beehive hairdos and the all this kind of glamour stuff. I just thought, well, I'll just cut it short in a way that seems attractive enough to me, and I'll bleach it blonde. I wore it pretty light blonde for a long time because that was a nod toward, this is the one of the, you know, you're supposed to look sort of showy on the stage.
In a really very short time, from changing fields, moving into this jazz field, very soon you were playing with some of the top names in the business. Even though you were not getting recorded, nonetheless, the other artists were recognizing you.
Well, there weren't very many people around, women around, singing the kind of music I was doing. I think, in all honesty, I had a combination of a certain kind of sound that appealed to the musicians, a certain forthrightness, and I was more like blowing than I was crooning or, you know, whatever. And more, I think musicians recognize that. I have always had an affinity for rhythm, you know, and the hot players like that, because most singers don't really, the rhythm is not necessarily part of their, what they place importance on, you know.
And I'm heartbroken, weary, but I try to be bright and cheery, having your fun, dragging my heart around. Well, things that you do, I tried not to notice. People all see and they know who the goat is, having your fun, dragging my heart around. Now I smile. Treat me like an old stranger, but I won't give you up. I'm gonna be like a dog in the manger. I'm not a fool, but how can you blame me? So deep in love, nothing can change me. Having your fun, dragging my heart around.
That was from the 1961 On My Way album. Kenny Whitson, cornet and piano simultaneously, no overdubbing. Billy Strange, guitar, Wellman Bro, string bass.
Now you never got a thing by being an angel.
All her life, Dane has been deeply involved in social activism, fighting racism in the 40s and 50s, in the 60s singing at demonstrations against nuclear power, and at protests against the Vietnam War. Through the 70s and beyond, Barbara's radical politics led her to Cuba, Vietnam, Russia, and Eastern Europe, joining international protests against war, nuclear weapons, and joining plenty of musicians along the way.
All you women raving about your monkey men, about your loving husband and your cheating friend. All you women sit around all day and moan, wondering why your loving daddy don't come home. Why women don't worry, why women don't get the blues. Now, girls, when you got a man, don't let him think you're square, 'cause if you do, he'll have a woman everywhere. Don't let lazy living ruin his appetite, just keep him working hard both day and night. Why women don't worry, why women don't have no. Now I got a disposition in a way of my own, not about to spend a lonely night at home. Dress up, go down. Better change your ways and learn to act real wise. I'm gonna tell you something and I wouldn't lie. Wild women are the only kind that ever get by. Why women don't worry, why women don't get the blues. That's what Miss Heidi said. She said, why women don't worry, why women don't get the blues.
So, besides being an exceptional singer of blues and jazz, folk, gospel, and spiritual music, Barbara Dane has been a nightclub owner, social activist, record producer, and hellraiser at large. Barbara's reissued some of her classic recordings on her own Dreadnought label and has a brand new CD out as well. You can contact her on the web at www.barbaradane.net.
No, no, rocks and mountains, please don't fall on me. 'Cause I'm stealing back to my old time used to be. But everybody here is having a jolly time. Yeah, everybody here having a jolly time. But they won't ever know what is on my trouble in mind.
My thanks, of course, to Barbara for sharing her memories and providing some of the rare recordings heard in the series. And thanks to public radio station KALW in San Francisco for technical assistance. Finally, to conclude Barbara Dane, A Life in Song, hear from her best reissued album, Trouble in Mind, is The Mighty Rumbling Blues. That's Jazz Rhythm. I'm Dave Redlauer. Thanks for listening.